welcome to The Inner Game. I'm Gwen Garcelon, your host. Thanks for listening. The Inner Game is about how we nurture and attend to our mind, body, spirit health, and how that allows us to play a bigger game and make a bigger contribution in the area of purpose that calls to us. And these are conversations with people who are committed to making an evolutionary difference with their lives from a place of balance and love and service. Today, instead of speaking with a guest, I wanted to do what I did last year and kind of start off with the year with an opportunity to release the previous year. It seems like that's kind of more and more necessary, especially with 2020, you know, just to kind of make peace with it, honor it for the turning point it was. 2020 was such a surprising year. You know, even for those of us who've been tracking trends and have been expecting the chaos that has unfolded in such a big way, it still was a year of surprise and being thrown out of anything familiar. You know, I kind of think of when I traveled to India many years ago, and being there is so outside the box that you're forced to let go of expectations and norms that you're used to. And I feel like that's kind of the role that 2020 sort of played for many of us, was just to let go of what we expect things to be like, how we expect things to unfold. And, you know, this is a lot of what quantum theory shows us and has told us for a long time now. Even though quantum theory still is not very mainstream, there's a part of quantum theory called chaos theory, and it's about the evolutionary process. And in order for things to evolve to a higher order, the existing paradigm that has become so calcified and solid, it has to be deconstructed and blown apart in order for something new to organize at a higher level. And this is a lot of what we're feeling, and it's not comfortable. But if we can have an orientation to it that allows us to see it for the potential and the possibility that it engenders, then that allows us to maybe relax a little bit more, maybe welcome it a little bit more, and maybe step up a little bit more because of the opportunity that is there. And I think, you know, we're meeting this challenge, you know, the challenges that are coming at us by becoming more resilient. And that's something I really wanted to talk about today. You know, there's an interesting piece of resilience that is a little bit counterintuitive. Something that I've gotten turned on to in the last several years, and it's starting to make a little bit of sense to me. And it's called defensive pessimism, because in our culture we are so hung up on the positive and being inspiring, and not to say that that's not absolutely necessary and such a big part of what we do need. But I think there's a role that this thing called defensive pessimism can play in kind of awakening us to the worst case scenarios that actually we kind of have kept seeing play out over the last year and continue to into 2021. It allows us to, you know, by allowing ourselves to envision the potentials of, you know, bad things that happen and the potential that they have to be disruptive and destructive, gives us kind of a sober awakeness that can prepare us to not be so surprised or disheartened when things unfold that are difficult. We can maybe be more able to retain and increase our creativity and our, you know, our generative capacities amidst persistent chaos and uncertainty if we're prepared for that. If we don't expect that things should always go smoothly and continue to grow as they have, you know, over the last many decades, when we've been in this time of, you know, just incredible growth and expansion on the planet, we're entering a time of a real necessary check to that growth. And it's a check of material growth, and it's more so a welcoming of the growth in consciousness that's occurring, where I think many of you who are listeners agree that that's a very exciting thing that's growing on the planet. But it's time to let go of that and waiting for that more perfect or stable time in order to give our gifts. This is a time to really learn deep resiliency and how we prepare ourselves and nourish ourselves to keep showing up amidst the uncertainty and the challenge. I was listening to an interview with Joanna Macy. I know many of you know her. She's now 91. She's been spent her whole life in activism and really an inspiring mentor, I know, to probably many of you. One of her recent books is called Active Hope. And I just wanted to read you something from it, because I know there's been so much talk about hope in the last few years. And it's something we throw around and kind of use as a crutch. And I think it's Joanna's orientation to hope is fairly helpful. She says, active hope is not wishful thinking. Active hope is not waiting to be rescued by some savior. Active hope is waking up to the beauty of life on whose behalf we can act. We belong to this world. The web of life is calling us forth at this time. We've come a long way and are here to play our part. With active hope, we realize that there are adventures in store, strengths to discover, and comrades to link arms with. Active hope is a readiness to discover the strengths in ourselves and in others, a readiness to discover the reasons for hope and the occasions for love, a readiness to discover the size and strength of our hearts, our quickness of mind, our steadiness of purpose, our own authority, our love for life, the liveliness of our curiosity, the unsuspected deep well of patience and diligence, the keenness of our senses, and our capacity to lead. None of these can be discovered in an armchair or without risk. Oh, it just, it really resonates with me every time I read that. I read it pretty often. Just to remind myself of to be willing to jump into the fray and the beauty of the passion for life, you know, that our action at best is motivated by love and not by some sense of duty or fear or burden, but really by the possibility, the endless potential that is available to us when we orient to that quantum reality that we now know is, and, you know, it can be measured, you know, that we're intrinsically connected. We have the ability to co-create with all of the power of the unified field of the universe. We're not separate from any of that. And I think, you know, I think that's why Star Wars and the whole concept of the Force appeals to so many. It kind of makes sense to us on some intuitive level that we are actually connected to this infinite force of love, and just to start to be open to the power of that, and to continue to remind ourselves that something much more is available to us than we have been enculturated to expect. We've been so long in this sort of Newtonian way of thinking of things, of cause and effect, and even our the way we orient to the climate crisis, and the, you know, the many measurements of what we can see is going on, and when we look at the science, it doesn't paint a very hopeful picture for us of what's unfolding, especially with how long it seems to take to create the kind of change that we know is needed in order to avert things like a runaway heating of the planet. But when we remember that we are part of a very, very powerful oneness. And I think we've all, you know, many of us have experienced this in our lives. Those moments when, you know, the unexpected happens, and you know, what we relate to as the miraculous, miracles. It can sound kind of fluffy to, you know, kind of even bring that up. But it's something I think we need to get beyond if we're going to meet the challenges that we're facing now on the planet and even just in our country. So I'm just going to take a quick break here and let everyone know this is Gwen Garcelon and you're listening to The Inner Game on KDNK. Today, I'm sharing some insights into how we can face the ongoing challenges already emerging in 2021 with empowerment and purpose and resilience. If you're a regular listener, you've probably noticed the frequent talk of local food systems and are the potentials available in rebuilding our local food systems and food systems work. This morning, I had a conversation with some colleagues who also work in food systems, and we were talking about leverage points that we each were maybe experiencing in the years we've been doing the work we do, and we started to, you know, as we were talking about it, we just realized, you know, and watched each other get so lit up. And we finally realized that it's not so much the leverage points within food systems work, but rebuilding local food systems is likely, and we've seen it time and time again, and now, you know, are just really clear that food systems work is a major leverage point, a major strategy for confronting climate change and the climate collapse we're seeing happening, and what we know we need to do to respond to that, not only to mitigate the damage, but to rebuild a functioning ecosystem on the planet. And it's so exciting that there's something that ticks so many boxes like when you start to grow food or even get close to farms and gardens, you automatically feel it. It's something you can just watch happen. You can guarantee the upliftment that occurs. And I wanted to share, and just to say, you know, in terms of making us more resilient and to making our, and to figuring out how to create more resilient communities, when we start to do the work of rebuilding our local food system and really strengthening that, it's kind of the gateway drug to so many of the other pieces of resiliency that we need. And, you know, the connection and the trust that gets built as people come together around food is one of those really important pieces of what we're seeing now needed in our communities to knit the divides, the many, many divides back together. People come together around food. They come together with the earth around food. And both of those things are such needed pieces of community resilience right now. I wanted to read you something from Paul Hawkins' book, Drawdown. Drawdown is the effort of many, 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 many scientists around the world putting together a comprehensive strategy for addressing climate change. So it's the 100 most effective strategies. And it's a blueprint. It's not rocket science. It's things we know how to do, which is actually incredibly comforting. And in the book, he says, "The act I want to talk about is growing some, even just a little, of your own food. Rip out your lawn if you have one. And then if you don't, if you live in a high rise or have a yard shrouded in shade, look into getting a plot in a community garden. Measured against the problem we face, planting a garden sounds pretty benign, I know. But in fact, it's one of the most powerful things an individual can do. To reduce your carbon footprint, sure, but more important, to reduce your sense of dependence and dividedness." You know, and that's again, that, you know, what I have experienced so often in doing this work. Over the past summer, I started a project that was a collaboration of CSU Extension and their Master Gardener program. They have a program that trains gardeners to use science-based research to do really effective food production. And then those master gardeners have lots of volunteer hours that they can offer to the community. And I thought, you know, there are a lot of people out there that would probably start a backyard garden if they knew they could do it and be a success, if they knew they had somebody's who was going to have their back and understand their situation and be able to guide them to produce food really effectively. So we started this project called the Home Food Garden Project, matching mentors, garden mentors, with people who wanted to start gardens, mentees. And it was really successful, and there are so many learnings that came out of it. But one was, again, sort of the validation that it's this kind of work that allows people to rebuild kind of a posture of humility towards the earth and really awe. When you see something springing out of the ground, you know, from a seed that you've planted and then, you know, turning into this beautiful crop of food, there's just a certain wonder of that and a deep appreciation for the nourishment that we find in the earth. We actually know now that our own gut health is tied to the health of the soil around us. So when the soil is degraded, our own immune systems become more degraded. And I think we all can see how much our collective immune systems have suffered because of our practices of degrading the soil around us through lots of different ways. Even with, you know, what may seem kind of benign, you know, pesticides that we may spray in our yard, but that degrades soil health. And that in turn degrades our immune systems. So we can increase our collective immune systems through our embracing of our local ecosystems and growing more food in natural ways. And the other thing that was really important was the rebuilding of connection between people. There were beautiful relationships that were built between these garden mentors and the mentees, people that were strangers to each other and now had shared with each other knowledge about their families and their communities and their situation. And that kind of connection is really important to healthy communities functioning across the divides that we are seeing as so destructive. There's something really important about shifting our relationship to the earth from something that is either just sort of a beautiful background that we take pride in, or a place where we recreate, or a set of resources, but changing our relationship to the earth as one of deep, deep connection. You know, and I think so often of the indigenous relationship to the planet. You know, they actually call it the planet, all my relations. The wind is a relation. The rocks are a relation. The plants and animals are part of how they consider family. And when we love something or someone deeply, we are just automatically invested and fed by that relationship to that. And it's out of love that we take care of it and take care of each other, and not because we are burdened by it or have, some heavy sense of responsibility. It's a lightheartedness. It's a wholeheartedness that we experience in that relationship. And I think that we find that possibility of that rebuilding that connection through rebuilding our connection to how we feed ourselves and how we feed others. You know, another part of the program that I started this summer was that if you had excess produce that, you know, you weren't using in your garden, that you would donate it to a local food pantry. So it's kind of building people's understanding of how people access food and the need in the community and how they can be a part of the solution and, actually help to grow food for their neighbors in need. And when you feel empowered, that's another important piece of resilience. So often these big challenges and the amount of uncertainty that we face these days can disempower us. And we so desperately need to be acting from a place of empowerment. And when you're serving others, and when you feel like you're part of the solution, it's deeply empowering. And this adds to our kind of resiliency stores inside us. And that's really, really worth putting some action into. And you know, as both Joanna Macy and Paul Hawkins said, you know, to take that on, to step up for that. So I hope some of this has been helpful to you. I hope you will take on 2021 with all of the love and creativity and capacity that you have, and that you look for new ways to serve and are served in turn by that empowerment. And much love to you all, and I will look forward to seeing you on the first Thursdays of the month as we move through the coming year together. Many thanks for the listening, and again, you can always join the Facebook page at The Inner Game and continue the conversation there. And we will see you again. I can figure out.
Are swift, rocks are ancient, mountains are high, oceans gray, winds are restless, trees are patient, you my child are away. Rivers churning, planets twirling, stars ablaze, storms are raging, atoms whirling, and you, my child, are awake to perceive these wondrous things, to count the beats of a blackbird.
It's 4:59. This is KDNK, Carbondale Community Access Radio, Glenwood Springs, Carbondale, the Roaring Fork Valley, and beyond. KDNK Board of Directors will convene a special executive session on January 8th, 2021 at 1 p.m. to review the HR assessment conducted by Investigations Law Group. Findings will be shared at the next regular meeting on January 18th. The meeting on the 8th is not open to the public. All right, stay tuned for All Things Considered coming up at 5 o'clock and local and regional news coming at you at 5:34. And updates on the news, or on the weather coming up.